mean get off my own land?
Now, don't go to blaming me. It ain't my fault.
Whose fault is it?
You know who owns the land, the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company.
And who's the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company?
It ain't nobody. It's a company.
They got a president, ain't they? They got somebody who knows what a shotgun's for, ain't they?
Oh, son, it ain't his fault because the bank tells him what to do.
That's a scene from the classic 1940 movie The Grapes of Wrath, based on the novel by John Steinbeck. It's a scene with striking similarities to the home foreclosure crisis today. The publication of Steinbeck's novel in 1939 became a national event. It was publicly banned and burned. It was debated on national talk radio. But above all, it was read. The story of a farm family driven from their land by the Dust Bowl and financial ruin sold nearly 500,000 copies in its first year of publication alone. And this was during the Depression, when few people could afford to buy a book. Later on, we'll talk with advocates for affordable housing in Central Ohio about foreclosures and homelessness in Central Ohio today. First, we'll hear about how parallels between the Grapes of Wrath and our current recession inspired a multimedia theater work, House Divided, that has its world premiere next week, October 6th, 7th, and 8th at the OSU Thurber Theater. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But right now, Marianne Weems, she's the founder and artistic director of the Builders Association. It's a New York-based performance and media company that creates original productions based on stories drawn from contemporary life. She is the head of graduate directing in the School of Drama at Carnegie Mellon University, and she's also the co-author of Art Matters, How the Culture Wars Changed America. And she's the director of House Divided. Welcome, Marianne.
Thank you.
In this work, you rethink the idea of a house, what a house means in 2011, and you talked about that. You've talked about that in contrast to what it meant in another production from 1994.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the Builders actually started with a production called Master Builder, which is how we got our name, even though people think we're a construction company. And Master Builder took place in a giant three-story house that we actually built as the set for the show. And it was sort of a metaphor for the psychological state of the Master Builder, and had all kinds of fancy triggers in it and video effects, and at the end the house split apart. And so it was very much about the kind of psychological dimension of architecture, and really using the house as a theatrical device. And then so that was 17 years ago,
right.
And you know, we've managed to survive and thrive since then. And there's a bunch of new younger artists in the company, and I had the idea of returning to Master Builder and restaging that production. But of course, it's 2011, and when we started to look at that, the meaning of that show, it really became clear that in many ways that house had been foreclosed, and that the meaning of house and home had been foreclosed, or at least was radically changing in the American landscape. So we started off on the idea of a new house, which is based on the, you know, sort of the essence of the foreclosure crisis and how that relates to, as you said, Grapes of Wrath and the larger historical dimension, you know, especially in America. So the piece is actually constructed, the set is constructed of a foreclosed house that we worked with here in Columbus, Ohio, and we were able to sort of cut up and tear apart and repurpose as the set. So we're still using a house, but it has a very different meaning.
In House Divided, the house means many things to many people. It's just not, it's much, much more, much, much less than basic protection from the elements.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's been a real pleasure making the show and using video and multimedia as we do, is that you can kind of layer different meanings and different readings of a house on top of each other, literally and figuratively. So, for instance, in this show, there's a foreclosed family who are dealing with, you know, the people who are doing the trash out on their house, which means once you lose your home, and often your possessions end up out on the street. There's another layer, which is the realtor who had sold them the home and negotiated the mortgage, and how that realtor's dealing with that now. And then there's a sort of macro level, which is about brokers working in a, you know, a larger trading firm and looking at the whole economic landscape in America and how those things, you know, how the mortgage crisis goes up and down and up and down and affects the market. So the house is kind of read through all these different lenses.
My guest is Marianne Weems. She's the founder and artistic director of the Builders Association. It's a New York-based performance and media company that creates original productions based on stories drawn from contemporary life. She's the head of graduate directing in the School of Drama at Carnegie Mellon University. She is the director of A House Divided. It's going to make its premiere at Ohio State University next week. We'll have more details about that coming up. If you want to have a get a link to that, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have a link for you there soon. Marianne, you also compare the role of banks today and during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
John Steinbeck called the banks the monster banks.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get into that today? Because there are a lot of parallels.
Absolutely. I mean, the Steinbeck text is incredibly prescient. And if you, you know, essentially if you replace the word farm with the word house, it is the same crisis. I mean, he spoke about, as you said, the sort of the monster of the bank eating the farm, having to be fed, you know, taking over the land. It's essentially about killer capital and very much about smaller tenant farmers and, you know, landowners being literally sort of, you know, enmeshed by this machine. So it just seemed like such a great natural fit to use that story. It's a really strong story. It's got great characters. You know, the Jode family is just archetypal, and to use them and their journey as a way to talk about the modern parallel has been, you know, completely satisfying.
Let's listen to some of the movie and talk about, the production's based on the book, but the movie's helpful on radio.
Yeah.
So, in this scene from the ending of the movie version of The Grapes of Wrath, Tom Jode, played by Henry Fonda, is forced to leave his family to continue the fight for social justice. His mother is afraid she'll never see him again, and he says that he'll always be with her in spirit.
Wherever there's a fight so hungry people can eat, I'll be there. Wherever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there. I'll be in the way guys yell when they're mad. I'll be in the way kids laugh when they're hungry and they know supper's ready.
In your opinion, has the current foreclosure crisis evoked that similar fight for social justice? And is that reflected in the production at all, if it is?
Well, absolutely. And I think that the, you know, that struggle is takes place on a daily level. I mean, I was listening to your show yesterday about real estate and foreclosure in the Columbus area, mm-hmm. and we also managed to interview some Columbus residents who are in, you know, the interviews end up in the show. And there's an incredibly articulate woman who's actually an MBA candidate at the Fisher School here at OSU, and she was recently foreclosed. And her ability to articulate, you know, her change in identity, that she went from a very established, you know, woman with a great job to being essentially homeless and having to wonder if she identified as homeless. I think, you know, it takes place on all these levels, economic and emotional. And also, I think, I mean, I love that clip, but it's so interesting that, of course, the Hollywood movie ended with that rousing speech, but the book ends with literally the grapes of wrath. I mean, it's about, you know, what men will, the lengths that men have to go to in order to become, you know, to become activists. And that's, those are the grapes of wrath.
It's in a different change in identity. And when you bring up the MBA candidate who has been foreclosed on, we think, hey, an MBA candidate, that's a successful person, isn't it?
Right.
But probably there in the day, we don't have as much of a parallel to that because it's not as common. But the family farmer, that was
sure.
a successful character. At one point in our national history.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that the irony that Steinbeck was, you know, dealing with is that the tenant farmers never owned the land, but they cultivated the land for decades until, you know, agriculture, the Dust Bowl, and financial ruin, you know, uprooted them. But that sense of instability and mobility is always there because they really weren't in, they didn't own the land. And even an MBA candidate isn't guaranteed a job. You know, I think that's the sense, is that there is this massive instability that we, in this generation at this moment, are really in the middle of.
Now let's listen to a clip from the Builders production of House Divided. We hear a local businessman who buys foreclosed properties in central Ohio. He starts out by saying his business title is somewhat amorphous.
1463 North 4th Street. The county treasurer foreclosed on the house, and I went through sheriff sale as a result of that foreclosure, and I bought it at sheriff sale. If I hadn't bought it, no one probably would have bid on it because it's been burned out and it's useless to most people. But I can tear it down and I can build a new house with certain funding sources.
It's an example in that case of the use of multimedia in the production. This character isn't really there. We're watching him on a video. So what's the purpose of using video as part of the performance? How does that work?
Well, as I said, it allows us to layer several, you know, visual elements on top of each other. So we have the Jodes house. We have images from the Dust Bowl, and then we also have images of that house, the 1463 North 4th Street house that Alon Daniels talking about. And that house is the touchstone for us. It's the house that was foreclosed that we ended up being able to use in the production. And using Alon to talk about it, you know, lends this air of reality. I mean, it's verite. You can't really get somebody to play a realtor with the same conviction.
It's hard to get them on the show, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, also an actor playing a realtor mm-hmm. is very different than somebody just saying, that's the address, that's the real house. You know, it does, I think, that's the advantage of media, is you can reach out and bring a lot of things to bear on the stage that you wouldn't if you're just, you know, working with actors and sets.
My guest right now, Marianne Weems. She's Artistic Director of the Builders Association. She's also Director of House Divided. It's the latest project by the Builders Association. It was co-commissioned by Wexner Center. It's an examination of the impact of the current mortgage crisis juxtaposed with passages drawn from Grapes of Wrath. We'll talk about that more when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, roll over Einstein. Scientists clock neutrinos moving faster than the speed of light. If it's true, it changes everything. We'll talk neutrinos. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. A mix of sun and clouds today. There is a chance of rain later this afternoon and a high of 68. Rain is likely tonight, maybe a thunderstorm, a low of 50 degrees. Scattered showers for Friday and chilly, a high of just 55.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Wexner Center, presenting the world premiere of the Builders Association's House Divided, a multimedia theater project inspired by Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath that examines the impact of the current mortgage crisis, October 6th through the 8th, wexarts.org.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking today about the parallels between the Great Depression and our Great Recession, as reimagined in a new theatrical production with John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath as a starting point, which will be performed next week at the OSU Thurber Theater. Marianne Weems is Artistic Director of the Builders Association. She's directed all sorts of productions there since the company was founded in 1994. And the latest, House Divided, the latest project, was co-commissioned at the Wexner Center. It's an examination of the impact of the current mortgage crisis juxtaposed with passages drawn from the Grapes of Wrath. Welcome back, Marianne.
Thank you.
Also with us, Charles Helms. He's been director of performing arts at the OSU Wexner Center for the Arts since 1991. He has organized creative residency projects that subsequently toured widely for artists such as the Builders Association, among many others, contributing to today's creative campus movement. Welcome, Chuck, to the show.
Hi, Anne.
Tell us about the creative campus movement and how that fits into the commission of this production.
Well, this production, House Divided by the Builders Association, is also sponsored by the Wexner Center Residency Award program, which is basically a program where we invite artists to campus to create new work and try to match their needs with our resources. This is a program that's been going on since 1991. And we're it's sort of a pioneering program amongst university performing arts presenters or university arts organizations, because a lot of those organizations just present work, but we really feel as a contemporary arts center, we need to invest in the making of contemporary work. So that program's going on, but this particular project with the Builders Association has been amplified because we received a Creative Campus Innovations Grant. Now, this is a grant program that's only open to university and college performing arts organizations, and it's all about special projects that interweave not only the making of new work, but the ideas that inform that work with academic impact in arts and non-art sectors on campus. So it's about the idea of a deep partnership with these academic areas to really provide leverage more resources. Because if you look at a large university, certainly like OSU, it's a vast degree of resources. And so it's not only just our great partnership on this project with the Department of Theater, who gave us the theater where we're premiering it. They gave us their scene shops to build the set, which is made from this house that was cut apart here in Columbus. They made the costumes and helped in all kinds of aspects of it, but we also, it's the intellectual capital of all these departments on the university that contributed to this project. So the builders a year ago met with classes from the Fisher College of Business that Marianne mentioned to the Knowlton School of Architecture. They met with humanities, agriculture, the Department of Art and History about the Depression era. So through those conversations, it helped shape the direction of this piece, and it also involved those students in the discussion of the ideas behind it, about the impact of the mortgage crisis and how that might weave itself onto stage. And in some ways, what we're trying to do with this project is provide the arts as a platform for cross-disciplinary learning. Now, that Creative Campus Grant, that's a national program. There were 140 applicants in our pool. There were 6 grants awarded. So we're really proud to be able to, not only bring the extra money and the extra time on campus so the builders can work with the students in the classes, but in many ways, I think it's one way that the Wexner Center tries to keep Ohio State University in a leadership role in this country through the arts.
Marianne Weems, what do Knowlton School of Architecture students have to learn from a production like this?
Well, it was definitely a two-way learning opportunity because we were able to use their resources and their, ideas as sort of proposals for set design. So they did a series. Catherine Bennett, who's a wonderful professor there, actually constructed a course around the idea of the set and the house and repurposing the foreclosed house as the set. And they came up with sketches and proposals. And, I think that informed ultimately the design. Also, they facilitated a great visit for us to the Worcester campus outside of Cleveland, where we saw community gardens that had been built on the spaces of foreclosed houses, and that's something we're very interested in is urban gardening, and of course that's a natural link to the Steinbeck text and the idea that we can somehow, go back to the land, however, in whatever contemporary form that would take. So that's just one example of a department where we really had, a really critical interaction for the building of the show.
That department or that class in architecture, they're also involved in looking at the Wineland Park neighborhood adjoining the university district. And they had, before they got involved with the builders, they had been looking at the urban planning aspects and through landscape architecture of what is the tipping point in saving a neighborhood? You know, how many abandoned, burned out properties, you know, does it make to really save a neighborhood or not? And so it was through those connections and their research in that area that they were able also to connect Marianne and the builders with the developer that you played the clip from earlier, mm-hmm. and got access to this burned out house that they were able to use for the set, which is literally like a physical manifestation of the idea of House Divided and of this kind of, you know, broken identity of American dream.
Some people say that, you know, really what's happened this time didn't necessarily change the physical landscape of America like it did back during the Dust Bowl. But I think people in Detroit might beg to differ.
That's true.
Absolutely.
And here in Columbus, we have, there's a zip code in Columbus that has the highest foreclosure rate in the country. And
it looks differently than neighborhoods that don't.
And like Marianne's saying, this is cutting across all sectors of society. I mean, this is happening in, you know, suburbs with McMansions just as it is in the inner city. So it's a very different kind of a situation than it was, I think, in the 30s.
My guests are Marianne Weems. She's artistic director of the Builders Association. She's also director of House Divided. And Chuck Helms, he is director of performing arts at the OSU Wexner Center. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Mark and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much. I guess I have two related comments. The first is I'm kind of disappointed that the subject of the show is a theatrical production about the foreclosure crisis rather than a show about the foreclosure crisis. And second, listening to the guests, I couldn't help but be have impressed upon me sort of the vast difference between a theatrical production produced by privileged people for an audience of privileged people versus the people actually affected by the foreclosure crisis in the real world. And it just seemed almost unethical.
Okay. Well, you know, of course, this isn't the only show we've ever done about the foreclosure crisis. And a upcoming segment, we'll be talking to a couple of housing activists in Columbus about what they're doing regarding it. But, Chuck, would you like to respond?
Well, I think that, you know, as Marianne explained, actually, you know, one of the people we interviewed had been directly affected by the foreclosure crisis, lost her house, and these developers that work in this. We're definitely, Marianne is weaving their direct verbatim stories into this production. And I think in overall terms, you know, it's really about raising consciousness. And, you know, culture and performance or the arts can be a lens for raising consciousness as well as direct activism. I think they all play their role.
I guess, Marianne and Chuck, you know, you wonder what if John Steinbeck had never written The Grapes of Wrath.
Exactly. What if Woody Guthrie had never sung those songs that are, you know, now part of the, you know, the deep part of the American culture? I think that, you know, we have to, you know, be open to all avenues that contribute to, you know, a changing landscape and hopefully changing behavior.
Marianne, did you want to respond at all?
Oh, just that, you know, the builders have a long tradition of dealing with socio-political hot points, and I think, you know, it's critical that artists engage in contemporary issues that generate discussion on all levels, whether it's in a theater or, you know, outside a foreclosed house. It's still about creating discussion and holding a mirror up to what's happening in contemporary life. So, you know, we've done shows about call centers in Bangalore and about data valence and about, you know, what it means to communicate in the 21st century. And all of those shows are directed towards, you know, obviously theater goers, but also people who don't have any access to or any interest in theater. So, you know, we try to spread the net wide.
Thank you, Mark, for your call. Appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join the conversation. Marianne and Chuck, I apologize if you've already gone over this, but there is an actual installation that people can see from this or not?
No,
or is that the case with the Master Builder, Marianne, and I'm confusing them?
Well, in Master Builder, we certainly yes, we did an installation of part of the house afterwards at the storefront mm-hmm. for art and architecture in New York. But I am actually considering maybe producing an installation of the set, but also creating a video documentary that would use all this material that we've put together from these interviews from local people in Columbus. We've done that with other work where we did extensive interviews, like with call center operators in Bangalore. And, you know, those pieces stand alone because it's important for us to do our research, and we do really try to reach out to a lot of different kinds of people.
What's the value of being in a place like Columbus versus New York City or L.A. or something where there's just probably a much vaster audience?
Oh, well, I think Columbus is really distinguished by the Wexner Center. I mean, if we were trying to do this in any other city in the Midwest, I might worry. But, you know, the Wexner has cultivated a really rich, smart, varied audience. And as Chuck Helms said, he has supported several projects, and this ability, our, you know, interaction with OSU was a special perk for this one. And so, you know, I feel like the audience will be really present and really engaged. Actually, some of the best Q&As we've ever had after the shows have been here. So, you know, it's a very different landscape than New York and LA, and in many ways preferable, especially when you're launching a new production.
If you want to join the conversation, once again, 614-292-8513. Let's listen to another clip from the Builders production of House Divided. In this scene, we're hearing the words of the novel The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck.
Go down now and tell them. You go down in the street and rot. And tell them that way. That's the way you can talk.
The words we're hearing, those are harsh. What's the context in the novel?
Oh, it's just horrifying. I mean, Steinbeck really gets into some heavy biblical stuff. And in this particular scene, the young woman, the daughter in the Jodes family, has just given birth to a stillborn child. And the idea is that they're going to float it down the river, the flooding river, down to the city and tell him, you know, essentially tell them the tragic story of what's happening to the Jode family. So you've got Moses in there and, you know, all kinds of unwed mothers. And I don't know. Yeah, it's a very heavy, there are some very heavy moments in the text, which can be, you know, melodramatic. But on the other hand, they're highly charged and emotional and still very relevant.
You say, and you've mentioned how long this work was in development to create, and you say that's a hallmark of your company's work, that, and also a sense of communal design called devised theater. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, it does take literally a couple of years from our first concept meeting to the actual production, and part of that is because there's lots of different artists involved. And it's important to me that they all contribute because they all come from different points of view. There's software designers and filmmakers and, you know, world-famous lighting designers and fantastic actors and some non-actors. And it's all about everybody being in the room, which sounds like a very, you know, hippie commune idea, but it's also, you know, a way to create 21st century theater that really integrates the media into the storytelling. So it's not just slapped on, you know, as a design element, but it's actually a way to support the story, and the depth of this story, you know, takes place on a visual level as well as a textual one.
Sometimes people would ask me when I was a newspaper journalist, and they ask me about this program now. How do you start? How do you decide what you're going to do? How does it start? So I'll ask that of you. How does it start?
And well, Chuck, do you want to talk about that? You had a really great description the other day.
Oh, you know, I think it starts with these conversations, basically, about, you know, I think that's one of the hallmarks of what your company's been about all along, of really early on tapping onto these ideas that are you know, become basically cultural and social, you know, forces that we all have to reckon with. And you have been very looking into the crystal ball and trying to identify those issues and very innovative ways of playing that. I mean, I think that's what people will be so impressed with when they see this production on stage next week, is this interweave of the Steinbeck material with the contemporary, with how seamless it goes and yet how cinematic and through the very sophisticated media. I mean, you literally make visible the kind of financial web that ensnares people's, you know, everyday lives, and the way that that's manifested on stage is so powerful. So I love to see the way it evolves when you guys are in rehearsal.
Miriam, when you're doing something like this, what do you learn? I mean, over the past year, what was the aha moment for you, if there was?
Wow, gosh, there's been so many. I think, I mean, you know, of course, talking to the MBA candidate was a real mind opener, and all the people that we've talked to are so, you know, phenomenally articulate about their position in this, the ecology of this crisis. But I think really coming face to face with the foreclosed house is such a, you know, deeply meaningful experience, because houses are characters. You know, they have personalities. They embody the traits of the people who live there. This particular house was owned by an older woman who eventually, you know, died of old age, and the house sat vacant for many years and was the victim of arson and, you know, squatters and raccoons and all kinds of things that, you know, you don't necessarily think of as of a house as being a living being, but the history of this house really reflects in so many ways the history of the people that have lived in it and passed through those neighborhoods, and, you know, who are living in those houses and being evicted now. So it's like really almost the physical architecture has this psychological dimension.
Chuck Helm, could you tell us about where people can see this, where they can learn more about it, and how they can get tickets?
Sure. You can certainly go to the Wexner Center's website, which is wexarts.org, or call our box office at 292-3535. We're going to premiere House Divided by the Builders Association on Thursday through Saturday, October 6th, 7th, and 8th. Even though the Wexner Center is taking the lead on this project, we've had a great partnership with the Department of Theater, and the performance is happening in their venue, which is the Thurber Theater at the Drake Center, which is over on Cannon Drive right next to the football stadium. I also wanted to mention that our film department is screening John Ford's classic film, The Grapes of Wrath, on Tuesday, October the 4th at 7 o'clock. It's a brand new 35-millimeter print, so if people would like a little refresher about how he saw that in the Depression, and you can, I think, see some kind of clear cinematic parallels in the way the builders treat the grapes material on stage. And actually, the next night, on October the 5th, we're doing a special premiere of the film from the Columbus Neighborhood Series produced by WOSU TV. This one features the University District, and of course, Wineland Park is part of the University District, where Marianne was able to get the foreclosed arson house that they're using for their set. And that's going to be on October the 5th at 7 and 9 p.m. So we hope people take part in all of these programs. And right after each show, we're going to have a talk back so people can talk not only to Marianne Weems, but many of the students and the faculty that took part in this Creative Campus project that built this show.
Well, Chuck, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's Chuck Helm. He is Director of Performing Arts at the OSU Wexner Center for the Arts. And also Marianne Weems. Marianne, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Oh, great. Thanks very much.
Marianne is Artistic Director of the Builders Association and Director of House Divided. Go to WOSU.org/all sides if you want to get some more links, if you weren't able to jot those down right away. And thanks for listening. Coming up, we're going to continue our discussion about the foreclosure crisis with a couple of guys that are trying to fix some of the problems. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with a discussion of the history of public employee collective bargaining in Ohio. Join us for that discussion, beginning at 11.
Support for 89.7 comes from Local Matters, presenting the third annual Local Foods Week, September 30th through October 8th, featuring 8 days of local flavor, including the Harvest Ball, a grilled cheese throwdown, and more. Tickets and event information at eatlocalohio.org.
Get access to 89.7 NPR News anytime online at WOSU.org. You can hear local and national news all day, every day, from the convenience of your computer or mobile device. Just visit us at 89.7 NPR News and visit us at WOSU.org and click on Listen Now. 56 degrees with cloudy skies. We could see a mix of sun and clouds today. There's also a chance of rain and a high of 68.
Showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight, a low of 50 degrees. Some scattered showers for Friday, a high of 55. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
We've been talking about the artistic interpretation of the foreclosure crisis in the United States in conjunction with the October 6th premiere of House Divided, multimedia theater work inspired by John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath. For more information about that, go to creativecampusosu.org. You can also go to the Wexner website. We'll post all of that at wosu.org/allside for more information. Joining us now for the here and now view of the foreclosure crisis in Central Ohio is Bill Faith. He's executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Bill has directed COHIO for 17 years, and he's worked in the affordable housing field since 1980. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Also with us is Steve Torsell. He's the executive director of Homes on the Hill. It's a community development corporation, a nonprofit housing development and counseling organization that with programs in the city of Columbus, Franklin, and Madison counties. Steve has led Homes on the Hill since 1997. The organization has established programs in new and rehabbed construction, owner home ownership programs, including pre- and post-purchase counseling, credit and foreclosure counseling, and down payment assistance programs. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks, Ann. Glad to be here.
We've been talking about the artistic interpretation and comparison of the current foreclosure crisis with the one from the era of the Grapes of Wrath. And I was wondering, Bill, why don't you just let us know, how does it look in Central Ohio at this point?
Well, we've had difficulty with it's not just the current mortgage crisis for Ohio, because we've had record levels of foreclosures for 15 years. And that's... I guess the good news part of that is it's starting to subside. This year, in the first half of this year, we had about 34,000 foreclosure filings statewide. But last year, that number was 46,000. So we've seen a decline, and that's heartening because we haven't seen such a decline in over 15 years.
And both of those are stacked on how many tens of thousands of foreclosures before then?
Well, we were hitting, 80,000 to 90,000 foreclosures a year for the past several years. And some of those don't all go to sheriff sales. Some of those, there's something that gets worked out. The foreclosure doesn't, lead to an eviction of the family. But since some of them get refiled. But nonetheless, this mounting level of foreclosures is starting to subside. Unfortunately, there may be reasons for that that are only temporary. There's really two big things that happened that are different in the last year than were prior to that. One is, you recall that the attorneys general in all 50 states sued the mortgage industry and Wall Street for fraud and really illegal processing of foreclosures. I mean, a lot of the media have referred to that as the robo-signing, scandal, where they just forge signatures on mortgage documents, threw them through the process in a very sloppy manner. So the attorney generals, got involved or engaged in significant investigations of the mortgage industry, and that has sort of cleaned up. They started to clean up their act, or at least slowing down the process. So some foreclosures may be piled up waiting to be processed. And in fact, in Ohio, 1 in 12 folks that have a mortgage are seriously delinquent, meaning that they're 90 days or more late in their mortgage right now. So I don't know that we're out of the woods yet, but it's starting to look a little better. The other thing that I wanted to mention that was on the good news side is that the Housing Finance Agency, the Ohio Housing Finance Agency, initiated a project with funding from the Department of Treasury to help homeowners that are struggling, particularly those that have had a temporary loss of income, people that are unemployed, people have gone through divorce, people that have been downsized in their job. And they've been able to help over the last year almost 3,000 folks avoid foreclosure. And that's the biggest dent we've ever seen. And in many efforts we've tried to prevent foreclosures, that's been the biggest number that we've been able to reach. And they're adding 500 or so homeowners to that list every month at this point. So, and they still have money to continue that program for the next 2 or 3 years. So that's been a help to reduce our numbers. More people are getting help. Fewer foreclosures are being filed. But I want to stress another point, which is here in Central Ohio, we have a great example of another problem, which is that we all pay for the foreclosure crisis. It's not just homeowners that go through foreclosure. And one way to illustrate that is that we have about 2.2 million Ohioans with a mortgage right now. But one in five of them are underwater, meaning they owe more on their home than the home is worth. And the value decline, just in Franklin County, in the last 3 years, 80% of our census tracts lost value, meaning our homes, you know, the old adage in the real estate business was homes always appreciate. It's mm-hmm. always a good idea to be a homeowner because home values will go up over time. Well, that's not true anymore. I mean, in the last several years, we've seen real declines in value, which means, you know, over the last, in the period of the mortgage crisis, like 2007 to 2009, $17.2 billion was lost from equity that people had in their homes in our state alone. So everybody pays for this problem. We've not had adequate policy responses to it, but we're starting, you know, to see this record level of foreclosure subside. So things may start to get better. There's more help out there than we've had ever before, but we have a long way to go.
I know, you know, a big goal over the years, and you know, both you and Steve Torsell, the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and also Homes on the Hill, these way predate, and your efforts way predate this current crisis, which underscores the point you were trying to make, is this has been going on for a long time. It's just gotten a lot of publicity in the last couple of years.
Right. We had this subprime mortgage fiasco where people were peddled, you know, toxic mortgages that would blow up on them after a couple of years.
And sometimes, you were talking to me about that 5 and 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, even longer than that,
yeah,
believe it or not.
Yeah.
So we had that problem. Finally, the policymakers, you know, moved to help address that issue. But that created waves of foreclosure before the current crisis hit the nation. And it really was this, what we call the sand states. You know, Nevada, California, Florida, Arizona, states that had big housing bubbles that burst, that created the national crisis. But those of us in the Great Lakes states, particularly in Michigan and Ohio, have suffered from this issue, really provoked by the subprime lending fiasco. So, yeah, we've been dealing with it for a long time, and we're still not out of the woods.
Steve Torsell, one of the things that your organization does is put on programs that include pre- and post-purchase counseling. And I was wondering, in this day and age, how much of that counseling is counseling people against homeownership?
I think the objective in our counseling is for people to have the tools to be able to make a good decision. We use a couple of basic formulas. One would be your ratio of your income. 30% is ideal of your gross income to be spent on housing support. The problem comes in when people are spending 40 and 50% of their income on housing. So we try to teach them the various skills that they need to understand, primarily their finances, and then they can make that decision. We've seen some increase, frankly, in pre-purchase counseling, which tells us there's always people out there who are looking to buy homes, which I think is a very important part of reestablishing a good basis for increasing housing values and really primarily filling up all the vacant and abandoned properties in a more positive way and making them active, because it's fairly widely known and accepted that a vacant property is negative in a number of different ways, its value, its attraction for crime, et cetera, much of which was discussed earlier in this program. So we hope that we're providing people with good skills to be able to make that decision for themselves, frankly. We encourage them to be wise about it. And many people that come in are not in a credit position to be able to purchase homes. So what we do is work with them on long-term credit programs to help them get there.
Well, before I go on, I want to invite people, if you have a question or comment for our guests, Bill Faith, Executive Director of COHIO, and also Steve Torsell. He's Executive Director of Homes on the Hill. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't wait too long. We want to hear from you soon before we go off the air on this program. You can also go to Facebook, as did Michael. He writes, I think the Great Depression and the Great Recession are as alike as they can possibly be, given the advancement of communication and technology since the Depression. Our world looks and feels so different. The Americans during the Great Depression had very little information as to the ploy of the people with money powers. They only felt the pain they caused them. We feel some pain, but now we see why we have to deal with this pain, and we see how greed is really at the core of both the Great Recession and the Great Depression. Despite all of that, Steve, a lot of people think that the American dream is the idea of home ownership. And I guess I was going to get, is that necessarily the case anymore?
No, it's much less so. And I think the crisis has certainly caused people to think twice about that. The important thing that we tell people about when you buy a home is you can't take it back. It's not like something you might buy at the store and you decide later on, I don't like the size or the color of it. You make a large investment and then you have that. And when dynamics such as decrease in property values occur, people find themselves sort of stuck in these particular homes. And I think that's what has people most concerned. In our particular area, which is South and Southwest Columbus, generally speaking, the decline in property values is significant, 20 to 30% all over the area. There are some select areas that might be less than that. So that causes people to think about what they're going to do with their investments. And I think what we all used to think was that it was the primary way for people with not much income to be able to accumulate wealth by the appreciation on their properties. When that doesn't occur, people then become pressed, because the other thing that's part of home ownership, you have to maintain your property. You need to have funds to do your repairs and maintenance and keep it up if you want to keep your value. Those are all important factors. And I think people think twice about those things today because of what we're experiencing.
Mike in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wonder if I could ask your guest about another statistic, and I haven't heard it talked about much. 3 or 4 years ago, I heard this statistic of the criteria for purchasing a house based on the ratio of your annual income to the total cost of the house. And the figures were something like this, where back in the 70s and 80s, it was like maybe 3 to 4 times your income would be what you could comfortably buy a house worth that much. But into the 2000s, it was up to 12, 13, 14 times. Do you have any information about that, or could you speak to that?
I think our formula is pretty much the older formula. We take your income and say that 3 or 4 times what your income is probably what you should be looking for maximum for a house purchase price. I think that's still active. I think maybe perhaps the statistics that you're referring to might be more applicable in areas of the country where there is much more rapid appreciation, such as the East or West Coast or areas like that. One of the advantages we have in Central Ohio and in the Midwest is our housing stock is much more affordably priced, and so therefore you don't necessarily have the same pressure. But also with that, our incomes aren't the same either. So there's a comparison there, but it's also two different worlds in some ways.
Bill, go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I think part of what you're referring to is really just a sort of example of how crazy the mortgage industry got in terms of what was the criteria they'd use to to provide mortgages. I mean, they didn't even document people's income. They lent people more money than the home was worth. I mean, they didn't check, you know, for solid appraisals. I mean, there's massive numbers of examples of how far the mortgage industry went because the focus wasn't on long-term performance of the mortgage. The focus was on originating the loan. The people that were doing that work got paid by origination, not by long-term performance. So we had, things got pretty warped. So I would pay close attention to what Steve's saying, that the older standard is much more appropriate when people are judging whether or not they should make the investment.
Thank you, Mike, for that call. Karen in Dayton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Hi, Ann. I had spoken with your associate about just a long laundry list of things that just didn't go in my favor, and I did have a foreclosure that came against me because I got injured and lost my job and was going through a divorce at the same time and had a legitimate buyer for the house and ended up going to sheriff sale anyway and selling for less than what I had. And I didn't know. I was hearing some things when you were discussing about programs that were available for down payments. I'm in a possible rent-to-own situation, but I'm still not back to work and getting the help I need with the medical issues from the injury. So I don't know if there's any possibility of getting back into a home because I basically lost the home over $3,000.
Okay.
There's a possibility. I think what I don't understand would be if you filed bankruptcy, for example, that would restrict your ability to do that. If you've had a foreclosure, I'm not so naive as to think that it won't help you move, that won't harm you moving forward. But I would say it's possible for you to get a loan. What as far as down payment programs, I would steer you to the finance agency, the Ohio Housing Finance Agency, OFA, that really provides a good solid loan product and a good solid down payment product at very affordable interest rates. And it really is the backbone, I think, of many lenders' programs and loans that they use to be able to have access to OFA's programs. Hopefully there'll be an organization locally in Dayton that you could talk to about this. I think the best way to find an organization is go to HUD.gov and look for a HUD-approved counseling agency. They should know all of the ins and outs that you need to know. Call them or email them and proceed, and hopefully they'll be able to help you.
Thanks, Karen, for that call. We're just about out of time, and I want to thank my guest, Bill Faith. Welcome. Thanks for coming to the show, Bill.
Sure.
We just scratched the surface, I know. Bill Faith, he's executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. And also Steve Torsell. Steve, thanks for joining us today as well.
Sure, man. Appreciate it.
Steve is the executive director of Homes on the Hill Community Development Corporation. Thanks for listening. We'll continue this conversation again, I'm sure. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.